Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 14 of the Think Orange podcast. My name is Dave. I am your host, and I'm also the co-host of my friend Ashley.
That is correct. You are my co-host, Dave.
And that's how I'm going to be saying it from now on.
Thank you.
I am your co-host.
That's right, and the audience knows that.
Yes, I think they do. Hey, how have you been? How's your summer going so far? We're about midway through summer already.
Yes, we're midway through summer. I can't even believe it's flying by, as I'm sure all our listeners feel that way too.
What is happening? It's going so quick.
A lot is happening, Dave. It's the middle of missions season for a lot of our listeners.
It sure is. And so you may already have picked up that during the month of July, we are talking all about service. That's been the theme, the thread that has been holding all of this podcast together, especially while we were away. It was the rope that held this whole thing together.
It's the way we could relate.
Now, ironically, you were away on a service mission trip, so you are actually living out this wasn't just theory for you. This was practical.
I try, man.
Now, for people who didn't hear last week, where were you? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was in Uganda serving at a ministry called Champions United Football Club.
Yep.
And they take coaches, guys, Ugandan guys in their 20s and 30s, disciple them, and they each have a community, and they have a soccer team of boys ages 7 to 15, disciple them, mentor them, and just be a role model, a male role model for them, because the father figure in their culture is very absent.
Well,
and father figures are pretty much disciplinarians, not necessarily someone you have a relationship with.
Yeah. I mean, I love that for a multitude of reasons. One, I love the fact that you're actually going over and doing that, and you're putting boots on the ground, and you're praying with your feet, which is something that I like to try to pass on to my kids. Don't just pray with your words, pray with your feet, and be actually practical in the way that you do things. But you're also talking about a multi-generational sort of thing here, where there are people who are mentoring the next generation below them.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting it from the generation that's above them.
Yes.
And you had some great stories about some of the dads who went on this trip with you and the interactions that they had with their sons, right?
Yeah, you know, it was really cool because it was a father-child trip. So I had dads and their 13-year-old kids, and I got to just witness what God was doing through the intergenerational relationships.
Yeah.
And every evening after small group, we would send the dads and kid away for a one-on-one with one question to talk about for about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was really cool because I got to go sit with the coaches. So there's like 10 or 12 coaches, and they're sitting there watching these dads talk to their kids. And it was like one of my highlights, because their questions were like, so what actually are they talking about? And that specific night, the kid was supposed to look at their dad and say, what was it about their dad that they were proud to have him as their dad?
Yeah.
And so I'm telling the coaches this, and they're like, what? I've never heard of that before. Like, nuh-uh. Wait, they're going to look in their dad's eyes? I've never looked in my dad's eyes and talked. And I'm like looking at them like, wait, what? And then there was this dad and son who were sitting there with, like, you know, the guy style with the ankle on the knee.
Yeah.
And they're both like leaning back, facing the same direction and talking. And one of the coaches points him out. And he's like, oh my gosh, I've never sat with my dad. They're actually sitting on the same level talking. I've never seen that. I've never done that with my dad.
Yeah. See, that's exactly what we're talking about today. That whole idea of how the one generation can influence the next, and how so often in so many of our churches that gets lost, and it gets lost without us even realizing that it's being lost. I know for me personally, like we talked about this a little bit last week, but you know, I just got back from a trip from Australia, and where my family and my wife and daughters, we're the only ones here from our family. So the big key for me was having my daughters interact with their grandparents and even with their great grandparents. Like my wife's nana is still alive, and we made sure that our girls got time to interact with her and just learn and just sit under the wisdom of somebody who was a couple of generations above them. It was absolutely amazing. So I love the idea that, you know, we're talking about service, but we're also talking about generations, and that's really what we're talking about today. A big part of what we're going to be doing and listening to today is from a guy named Chuck Boma, who is a pastor in Portland, Oregon, and he's going to be talking about how churches can embrace and cultivate intergenerational relationships. So maybe at your church, you might not see this. Maybe your church is a setup where there's a youth service or there's a contemporary service and a traditional service. So often we do that in our churches. But what Chuck is going to be talking about is how you can cultivate this intergenerational idea in your church. And then our good friend Sojo, I haven't seen Sojo for a while. I'm looking forward to catching up with him again. He's a fantastic friend of the pod. He does an amazing interview with Virginia Ward. I mean, we've been talking about this one. We've been looking forward to showing this one off, haven't we?
She's amazing.
She is absolutely amazing. She is smart. She is kind. She is loud, which, I mean, actually, now that I say it, that's a great segue into our sponsor for today, because today's podcast is brought to you by Orange Curriculum. And here's what's a part of the deal. I want you to help me with this one, because we know that everybody who's listening to this podcast, you are already smart. You're already kind. You're already loud. But we want to make you smarter, kinder, and louder. So what are we focused on there, Ash? I think that's the closest thing to singing we're going to get from you today.
That was the remix, Dave.
Was that the DJ Khaled
DJ
version?
DJ remix.
So good. Well, I'm going to get our producer, Kevin. He's a DJ, so I'm going to get him to actually try to put in a real record scratch in there. Think you can do that?
I don't think I need any backup. I think it was perfect.
I want to hear it again. I thought you were actually coughing. I was literally about to call in a nurse.
Dave.
Medic. We want to make you smarter, kinder, louder, and you can get all the free resources to better serve your neighbors, to better create a church that is intergenerational and serve the people in your community by simply going to tryorangefree.com. Now, people don't understand my accent, so can you give it to them?
Tryorangefree.com.
Tryorangefree.com. Great sponsors of the pod, so make sure you check them out. Hey, we're going to get straight into today's content. It's a lot of great stuff. Make sure you've got a notebook handy or something to record. Some of the bombs that are going to get dropped here is absolutely amazing. Some truth and wisdom is coming your way from Chuck Bomer and Virginia Ward. Check this out.
I think concerned would be a good word, about the lack of intergenerational relationships happening in churches. And if your church would be fall under the category of normal in America, in this category, it would look something like there's a chasm between generations, sometimes friction and frustration. There's probably a little bit of confusion as to what one generation values over the other. And because of all of that, you have this disconnect. And it's a great thing for us to desire to get two people from two different generations to sit in the same room, meaning like a church service or whatever. And we try to program and organize in this such a way in which multi-generations could come to one place at one given time. But the truth is just because two people from two different generations are sitting in the same room, it does not mean they are connecting. And so what is it, the question that I want to help answer today is, what is it or what are those things that churches are doing that help cultivate intergenerational relationships in everyday life? Not on the church campus particularly, not on any church or not even, and even outside of church organized events or programs. What are like some of these values that churches are embracing, mine included, that are cultivating and seeing fruit in the sense of people from different generations actually relationally connecting in everyday life? So how do we overcome this? So I'm going to talk through five characteristics that churches are embracing that cultivate intergenerational relationships. And I'm going to talk about these in the sense of value, not program, okay? Because I don't think talking program or structure is really going to benefit. It's because you're going to apply this value differently than I will, and you ought to apply it differently. But I'm just going to focus on the values, okay? And we'll talk through some practical implications for that. The first value is a value of difference. And that might seem contradictory to what I just said, but in the sense of we structure around difference, right? But something that helps cultivate intergenerational relationships is a healthy value of difference. And the obstacle of this is that affinity is natural. What I mean by affinity is I'm naturally gravitating towards people just like me. I have a wife, I've been married 10 and a half years, I have two daughters, 6 and 3, and I'm going to naturally gravitate and connect with, relationally, faster with people in my same life stage as anybody else. And so if we're going to value difference, and we understand this in Scripture, I'm going to talk through this a little bit, it's going to have some issues. So here's how we would do it. We focus on a theological beauty of diversity. That when I talk to people in my church, and we're talking in the life of our communities and groups and however, whatever you might call them or whatever it is, that we talk about a focusing on the theological beauty of diversity. We can go to passages like Romans 12 and or all kinds of different passages, Ephesians 4, and that talks about the idea that we're all made unique, we're all uniquely cared for, loved, desired, known, and used. And the idea is that I focus on this theological beauty of diversity in that I understand that I am not going to grow when I'm around people just like me. That's unbiblical. I need all kinds of different types of people in my life for the body to be the body to the body of Christ. And for me to grow up, I need to be around people that are different than me, that bring different things to the table than I do, and that have different perspectives, different life stages, different attitudes, different everything. And so in order to cultivate this, I need to be able to have, and we need to be able to have, a healthy value of difference, biblically grounded in the reality that I have to be around people that are not just like me. Second value is a value on responsibility. And what I mean by this is that we value the responsibility that older generations have to disciple younger. That's what I mean. We have a value on the responsibility that we're given as believers to disciple younger. Maybe not age stage younger, but at least younger in the faith, right? And if churches that are valuing this responsibility and holding people to their responsibility to disciple, we'll see and experience intergenerational relationships. We have to think outside of program and formal organization for connection. Remember, here's what I'm talking about. The sense of belonging comes through relationships. In order for people from different generations to have a sense of belonging in the same church, they have to have relationships. And here's the deal. You and I do not want anybody programming our relationships with other people, do we? No. So we can't do it to other people because they don't want it either. And so we have to figure out a way in which we intentional. I'm not saying structure or strategy is negative. In fact, we have to be very intentional, and I think we still should be strategic. But to be intentional about connecting people relationally versus programmatically, and we'll talk through some of this. Here's, make sure that older believers know their responsibility. Titus 2 speaks of older women coming down to younger women. And if you read that passage, it's all in line with sound doctrine, and it's all the practical implications of everyday life. How to love your husband, and how to take care of a family. And there's all these kind of things that are very practical expressions of the gospel, of sound doctrine, the truth of the scriptures, the truth of God, the truth about Jesus. If you study the flow of the book of Titus, it's right there. The same principle is not negating men. In fact, it applies to men. In fact, in 2 Timothy 2:2, Paul actually talks about older men entrusting younger men. In Matthew chapter 28, Jesus looks at his disciples, who he has walked through life with, and in and out of circumstances, and he says to them, "You go and make disciples." Now, my question to you is this. What do you think the disciples had in their mind when Jesus said that? Like, what is the picture that they walked away with? You see, they did not move to a position where I need to have a once a week meeting over coffee and go through a third party book. It's not that that's bad. I'm just saying that's not the picture that they got. what the picture that they had was all that they've seen. And they walked with Jesus through everyday life circumstances. Nothing was programmed. Nothing was even planned, right? Well, I mean, sovereignly, I guess it was. But it's one-to-one. It's bridge-to-bridge. And in the context that I did this in, just to give you as practical examples as I can, I started this from a large program that I did, like a gathering point, a service for college-age people. And I started to realize, this is great. This is good. God's using it. But they desire and they need, college-age people, need something more. And I started to understand they need an intergenerational connection. And they wanted it because they felt a part of our ministry, but they didn't feel a part of our church. Why? Because they were only relationally connected with people in our ministry. So I individually started to connect two people to two, you know, to each other, just one-to-one, one-to-one, one-to-one. And before you know it, the Bills were telling their friends about the Jameses, and the Jameses were telling their friends about the Bills, and all of a sudden it's a snowball that goes. It wasn't mass-produced. It wasn't a program or a spreadsheet. And to be honest with you, you couldn't immediately measure it by quantity. But over time, you saw intergenerational relationships happening by themselves, and it was cultivated because there was a beauty and a value of diversity and responsibility. The third one is this, a value on family. Here's the obstacle, cultural connotations to the word family. Now, I want to be careful when I say this, but I'm again, I can't do anything but just say it, okay? So catch my heart in this. We need to be very careful how we use the word family. And when I say a value on family, this characteristic is probably different than what you think, maybe. So let me walk you through it. We have to be careful not to alienate kids, college age, or singles with language. When we talk about family in the church, we typically think of it as a nuclear family. And if we're not very, very careful, those kids in your church that have a broken home feel alienated, because they know what you mean by family. College age and singles that are trying to figure out who they are apart from their family and as an independent adult and have a hard time navigating their relationship back with their parents, some better than others or some worse than others, but they're in this place where they don't have a family. And when we talk about family, we're alienating them. We have to be very careful when we talk about family. And this is why I would say that we need to teach and live out theological ideas of family. When I mention family in my church, and I think churches across the country, the leaders that I talk to, that are cultivating intergenerational relationships, they have an emphasis and a high value of the theological understanding of the family of God. Single, divorced, widowed, whatever it might be, a child and a victim of a broken home. They didn't choose for their dad to leave or their mom to leave. They didn't choose to have their parents divorced under good terms and still be friends. They didn't choose this. And when we talk about family in a structure as a structure in which they don't live, they don't feel like they belong because we're emphasizing family in a nuclear sense and they don't connect. But everybody connects to the theological idea of family. So when I say these churches are embracing a value on family, I mean the family of God, the people of God, the children of God. 1 Peter 2:4-10 talks about this. It talks about the priesthood of all believers. You got Ephesians 4:1-16 talks about we're one spirit, one body, one God, one truth. It's just one faith. It's all there. We're all the people of God. Every Christian has been given a holy identity of which we're to express in the world regardless of your circumstances. And we're all a part of the family. And so when we have family camp, you know what we do? We have all church camp. It's a family. We're all a family. This is a family deal. And so what I want to say here is that we need to show all people that they are valuable, not just certain types or certain gifts. That every single person is uniquely made and needs and has a responsibility to embrace their unique differences for our church to be healthy. Value on family. Fourth is a value on others. And this goes back to the gospel, and we'll talk about this for a second, but a value on others is really important. And here's a practical application for you. If people think their faith is about bettering their life, they will think the church exists for them and thus will rarely interact with others unless they immediately see how it benefits them. And this will rarely be the case. You see, if I have this idea that the gospel is about bettering my life, then I'm going to think the church is for me. And I'm not going to relate to anybody unless I think it's going to benefit me immediately. And when I think that, it doesn't happen. I don't experience it. And I go around people that are just like me because I feel like it benefits me. Does that make sense? And so this idea of value on others, the obstacle is a consumer mentality, right? This is like the core of American culture, right? Right? I mean, we're all there. And we all have this mentality. But this value on others, it's a gospel, it's a value on others in the sense of a gospel calling is a self-denial and trust. In Mark chapter 8, verse 34, Jesus says, if you want to follow me, deny yourself and trust and follow me. Luke chapter 9, he says the same exact thing. When he calls, the gospel call is to deny yourself and trust and follow me. Later on in Luke chapter 9, these people say, I will follow you, but first let me do this. It's implied that they didn't follow him. Another person says, I'll follow you, Lord, but first let me do this. It was like, I'll follow you, God, but first let me take care of myself. Or let me take care of my family. Or let me take care of my home or my money, which is those three things in that passage. But the call of the gospel is a call to self-denial and trust. To live a gospel-centered lives, we will seek to live selflessly. 2 Corinthians 5, by the way, he says, Christ died so that those who live would no longer live for themselves. It matches exactly with the call of the gospel and what Jesus said, right? No longer live for themselves, but for him. So it's a healthy focus on others. And if we come to this, and if we mobilize people universally on this issue, we will see individual connection. See, here's the idea. Let me go to the key point. A gospel-centered life leads us to giving community to others versus seeking it for ourselves. You see, if I can operate with a healthy value on others, and it's the call of the gospel as a Christian, and I can say, my life is not about me. I have to deny myself for the benefit of others because that's what Jesus called me to. I'm going to seek to give you community. I'm not going to seek to get community. But the beauty is that when we have a value on others and all of us are seeking to give community, we all get it too. And this value, it is a gospel value, that a value on others is going to help cultivate intergenerational relationships because our lives have never been about us, they're not about us, and they'll never be about us. And so this value on others can't be guilt-driven, but it's got to be gospel-centered. Does that make sense? And when I talk to leaders across the country, and I'm around the country frequently, these are the values. It's a value on others. And it works because it's gospel-focused. And we're embracing our calling. The last one is a value on quality. In the obstacle that we're facing is that in our culture, quantity rules. All of our measurements are based on quantity. How many people or how many registrations or how many this, it's all quantity. And why do we do that? Well, it's easily manageable. It's easily measured and it gives us an idea of what's happening. But you kind of have two spectrums. You have one side of people saying, well, you know what, if it's healthy, it will grow numerically. And Jesus taught to thousands of people, and the church in Jerusalem, the gatherings were enormous. Well, on the other side, you have people that are saying, well, you know what, it's about small things. And because Jesus turned away thousands of people when he preached, and people met in their homes. And you have this dichotomy on quantity, and it's never been about quantity. That's a Holy Spirit issue, right? That's a God issue. It's never been about quantity for us. We're never called about to quantity. He doesn't say if you don't grow your church, you're fruitless, right? The fruit of the Spirit is not quantity, right? And so when we look at the fruits of the Spirit, it would show a quality of relationship. And so let me show this consistency and frequency. How do we know quality of relationships? Because relationships provide belonging in the family of God, in the body of God. And when we have a belonging in the family of God, we have an identity in the world as Christians. You lose your identity in the world if you don't have belonging with the people of God, because that's the way you're created. Now, this first deal here, how do we know that there's quality? Well, there would be consistency and frequency of time spent. And I intentionally put here off the church campus. I know that you have a quality of relationship with somebody, not because you attend the same church service or go to the same class. I know that you have a quality of relationship based on the amount of time that you spend together. And if you're consistently and frequently, let's go back to Bill and James. How do I measure that relationship? How many Bills and Jameses I have? Maybe. I don't want to negate numerics and quantity. That's certainly something to be said for that. But how do I, just because I have 400 Bills and 400 Jameses doesn't mean that that's all it means. I have 400. I don't know what those relationships are like. How do I measure that? Well, if Bill and James is meeting together frequently and consistently off the church campus and maybe outside of anything you plan or organize, you know there's a value on that relationship. And I think the churches that are understanding that I have to place a value on quality of relationship, not just quantity of attendance or involvement, but a quality of relationship, because that shows relational connection, which gives belonging, and that leads us to mission. We're heading in a direction. Giving older believers practical everyday examples like this. Can you get to a point where you have a younger person that knows where all the dishes are in your kitchen? That's as practical as I can give you. What do I do? Well, there's a lot of younger people in our church. Can you get them in your home and get to the point where they know where every single dish is in your kitchen? If you get to that point, you know there's a quality of relationship, right? And if you trust that Bill, that he's focused on the scriptures, he's a faithful man of God, and all these kind of things, you know that he's going to be talking about the scriptures, and he's going to be probably praying with this individual. But this shows a quality of relationship. All I'm saying is this, is that we just have to be very careful at only measuring quantity, and we have to figure out some examples and measurements by which we will measure quality of relationship, because that's what everybody wants, and that's the way God's designed us. And when we can do that, we get out of the mass production that really does not bring intergenerations together, and maybe to the same room, but not necessarily connecting. And we have to move beyond that. That could be a part of it, but we also have to add in this element of developing quality of relationship and finding ways that we can measure that. I think we should measure it. I think we should evaluate it. I think we should critique what we're doing and why we're doing it and how it's what the fruit of it is being, but it's not always just about quantity. Here's my main point for this. Measuring quantity is not necessarily a sign of success for spiritual leaders. It's not necessarily a sign for spiritual leaders. I'm a spiritual leader. I want to lead in spiritual matters. And this is where the values, if we can have a church, our churches embrace a healthy value of difference, that we have a church that has a value on others, we have a church that understands the quality of relationships, we have an idea of the family of God, we're embracing our responsibility, we have a healthy value of difference, now we're working towards really cultivating a culture of intergenerational relationships. You might not be able to measure it right away, and so we have to take off our American hat and put on our Jesus hat. I've never used that phrase before. I don't think I'll ever use it again. I just feel very awkward about that statement right there. As soon as you heard it the same time I did, it just came out. But these are the characteristics.
Well, we are back. My name is Joseph Sojourner. I'm sitting in for Dave Adamson, and I'm here with the wonderful Virginia Ward, Associate Pastor of Abundant Life Church in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Harvard is there. Your church is there. You are there. Mm-hmm. And she gets to talk to us today about something that I think is probably one of the most geez, what would you say? The most coveted topic, I would say, in a lot of the churches that I've been traveling to, and it's probably as well as you have, but we're talking about intergenerational neighboring, which is probably a phrase most people aren't familiar with. Mm-hmm. So can you start by telling us what intergenerational neighboring means?
Yes, thank you for having me here today, actually. So intergenerational neighboring is the intentionality of connecting with every generation, from the youngest to the oldest, from the cradle to the grave, as it were, making sure that we are connecting with those who are not only in our building, but outside of our building, for those whose contacts are either in a city or even rural where there are neighboring buildings surrounding them, and even for those who are not, that there's intentionality about reaching every age group.
Now, and this is why I think it's such a pivotal conversation for many churches. You have the established members of the church that have been there for a long time, as well as a lot of these students, as well as millennials in the church. When a church is looking at the tension of, we want to begin to lean more millennial, but our tithers are the established members that have been here, more seasoned members of the church. I mean, how do you begin to manage that when you're trying to target everyone, but you don't want to anger the people that are used to church a certain way?
Right. And to that, I say it's a both and. So we keep swinging the pendulum to one side or the other. We think we all have to reach the millennials, or we're all trying to keep those baby boomers happy who make the money, who can write the checks. When you say, we have this project here, they can write the check. They're not rolling pennies. They can actually handle it. So there's intentionality to say to the church, let's not forget those who are, yes, fresh off the boat, coming in the door, need to understand things. But let's also not forget the people who have been here for a while. There's work to be done. And what it says to church leaders and what it says to us as leaders and those who are on those boards is that everyone has to be touched. Everyone, their voice has to be heard, and they need a place where they can give their voice from the programming side and even to the delivery side of it, which means we just can't take that pendulum and keep going from side to side. We have to struggle and wrestle with that balance in the middle. And that's hard. It is hard.
So just going down this road, because I feel like we've had this conversation with a lot of young leaders who say, I don't have power yet in my church. Like, here, I'm trying to talk to people that have been here longer. Like, what would you tell a young leader who is saying, I am trying to give my voice more, but it doesn't seem like my voice has any value? I mean, would you tell them, hey, be quiet? I mean, or would you tell them to just say, fight for it? Because, you know, you hear so many things that people say to them. What would you say?
I would tell them to use the same approach they're using with their peers, i.e. build a relationship. So our young people, when they were like, I don't know if the leadership are listening to us, they started inviting us over to their houses, or can we go out for coffee? So can we go out for me? I'm a tea drinker, if you please. So they invited me out to tea.
Come on.
And so we would go have a spot of tea and we would sit down and I could hear what they were thinking, but then they could learn what I was thinking.
That's good.
And sometimes it wasn't just over. So the same concept of building relationships that we use in youth ministry, we have to teach people who are on the other sides of the generation to just start with common ground. We all have to eat. Let's start with conversations over food so I can understand your world and you can understand my world. Even in our church, we also started doing focus groups so we could help the older generation understand the younger generation and vice versa. So we did like this quiz and we said, like, what's an Air Force? What is a true religion? Yeah. And so the older folks were like, true religion is loving Jesus. And the young folks like, no, that's a pair of jeans.
It's a pair of jeans.
So we had to go through and explain. We had to get to a place of common language.
That's good.
But it started with relationship. So that intergenerational neighboring wasn't just outside of the building. It had to start inside the building first.
Ooh, Virginia,
and it had to start with having conversations where older people weren't afraid to talk to younger people and vice versa. And to say that, look, y'all, we're all in this spot together and we need to know what that means. And the only way we're going to figure that out is using that relationship principle and getting to talk to and know one another.
Okay, well, let's keep it right in the building then. We're talking about churches who are looking to have successful intergenerational neighboring conversations, but they have limited resources. We're not talking about mega churches who have tons of space, tons of money, tons of opportunity. But this is just one, they're short on staff, they're short on volunteers, time and money. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say, first of all, that would be me. Welcome to the club. Welcome to my world, okay? Because we are not a mega ministry and we have limited resources. There are only a handful of people who are on staff, as it were, paid staff. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is a volunteer.
Everybody.
Okay? Everybody. So we come week to week, but we all eat. I go back to the eating principle. We had to find what was common ground. We all eat. We all traveled back and forth to church together. So some of it meant, okay, can you pick up so-and-so? Because now you're beginning to make conversation. So then it was like, all right, can during coffee hour, when we're sharing tea and a donut, can y'all sit down and have a conversation? So we were intentional about what my husband calls a 5-minute rule. So after church, for 5 minutes, you can't talk to somebody you know who's like you and in your generation. So you have to talk to somebody else. So it made people, the introverts had to come out of the introvert. The extroverts had to then go be extroverted with somebody else that they didn't know. And it made us intentionally work at reaching across the divide to meet and to talk to someone else.
That's good.
You can do this with minimal resources. It takes creative ways of building relationships. And then we used what we already had. So we annually do a neighborhood block party. So before we reached out, we made sure we were reaching in, and all of the block party teams became intergenerational. Then when we went out, we made sure we didn't just have all basketball and games for the young people. We had table, sit-down board games for the older people. And sometimes we just had a couple of tables where you could just sit and chat. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to do nothing. Mm-hmm. So we made sure we took into account everybody who's at the table. So you can do it on limited resources. It means you have to be creative, come together. You need more voices at the table than just one or two people. And make sure the people at the table are also intergenerational. You've got to give them space.
Which is actually so natural when it comes to millennials, because millennials value multiple voices, and they actually value a spectrum of ages. Mm-hmm. And so having board games as well as activities that are more a physical base is going to actually appeal to them. But I just want to keep going down this road, because when you're talking to churches that may feel like we're not the mega church, we're not as cool, so how do we get a young person? Mm-hmm. Like, we're trying to get them in our doors to consider our church. Maybe your church might have the same type conversations. We want young people, but a lot of times young people will flock towards the lights and the church that has the cool social media pages.
Right.
Are you saying that these techniques are ways that you guys are able to attract and be able to hold a lot of the young leaders that are coming in through your doors?
Well, it's intentionality about making... So yes, some of it is that cool, flashy stuff, but a lot of it isn't. It still boils down to relationship. Because I've also heard some millennials say that they're at the big spaces and they don't know anybody, and it doesn't feel warm. It doesn't feel like they're connecting. But when they come into other spaces, they can meet with people. If someone walks in the door today, and if I came to your house today and said, "Hey, Joseph, how's it going?" And you're like, "Sit down over there. Stay in a corner." Or you said nothing to me. I'm not coming back to your house.
That's
I don't
good.
Care if you live in the Taj Mahal or in a 2x4 hut. But if I come to your house and you're like, "Oh, welcome. It's good to see you." So as new families come in and people come in and they're trying to connect with us, we're intentional on not me just hanging with my best buddy that I know all the time. I open up the space so new people can feel welcome and come in. And then we're also going to places where people are and then inviting them in, but also we're going to spaces where they are. So that's why we physically do some things outside. We'll have slider and slush night, where we just get some slush, we put out the grill, we make sliders, and there's no gospel being preached. There's no, oops, here's Jesus on the side. No. We're just building relationships with you.
That's so good.
Intergenerational. So, you know, again, you don't have to have the slick programming, and we're just out in the backyard in a parking lot. Maybe throw up a tent. So we don't have all that slick stuff.
But they're known.
They're known.
They walk through the doors and they know that they're known, and you guys pour into them, which is so crucial and important when you're looking to be.
What's your name? I got to remember your name when I see you the next time. Mm. Or some fun characteristic about you that makes you feel like I know you. So when you're walking down the street and I see, "Hey, what's up, Joseph? How you doing? Did you pass that exam last week?" It's all relational again.
So
it's all about me knowing you. You don't need money for that. You just need intentionality about it.
Mm. Okay. So there are some churches that say, "We want to start doing this better." I mean, what would you say to the church to say, "Right now we want to start shifting our thinking towards intergenerational neighboring"? Mm-hmm. What would you say to them?
I would say start with an assessment first, to stop and look at, where are you at? Kind of like at the mall when you're trying to get to Macy's and you look at the diagram and, "Oh, Macy's over there." But then there's this big red dot that says, "You are here."
You are here.
You need to know first where you are.
Ooh.
So that you can say, "Okay, we are reaching very well this particular age group, but we're missing this age group.
We're not even on the right floor.
Not even on the right floor. Hello. So you have to first assess where you're at. And that should be multiple voices and allow, and maybe you start out with, maybe it's just one age group that starts it. And you might look at it and say, this is not all of who we need at the table. We need more seniors. We need more young people. We need male and female. We need other ethnic groups. Because maybe for some, the intergenerational neighboring looks like other ethnic groups at the table.
That's good.
Well, leave that alone. But you might have to get some of those folks and ask some of your friends, who do you know, and ask outside of the church. You can also bring in, there are some people that I know that have invited what we call secret shoppers in. So they'll ask a friend from another church to come to their church and say, tell me how warm we really are. Were you really received? I visited a church in Chicago, and they say they have a prayer room, and if you have prayer, come after service and we'll pray for you. And I was like, okay, let me test it and see what it does. Have a secret shopper come in and test what you're currently doing, and they can speak truthfully into you and what you can do and what you shouldn't be doing kinds of things. So I would say it first has to start with an assessment of where you're at, and then move to a space of saying, who are the voices that we're missing and how can they speak to this and what we need to do before we run to the do.
That's good.
I think we have to stop and assess first.
So you assess first and then moving towards the do.
Mm-hmm.
When we're moving towards generational thinking, there's got to be a community aspect as well.
Yes.
So how do churches serve all their neighbors and not just one demographic? Mm-hmm. And is that even possible?
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like someone says, they say to women, can you have it all? Can you have the career and the children and the fine brother and the house? Can you have it all? And I say, yes, but in stages.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get it all at one time. Okay. So the same with churches. Can you really reach everybody? Yes, but in stages. You'll go through a season where you might do really well with your seniors. And then once you get that established, it's like the statement of how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Yeah.
So once you establish that, you might say, well, who needs to connect with our seniors? Well, you might do the bookend approach and do seniors and our young people. And you might establish some best buddy something where seniors are connecting with younger folks and younger folks connecting with seniors. And then you say, okay, what's in the middle of that? Well, we have families of all different ages, of parents just starting out versus those who've been parenting for a long time and maybe they're empty nesters. Well, let's get those bookends together.
That's good.
Because the parents whose kids are empty nesters, they've walked through all of the phases. They've done elementary, middle, and high school. They can help out those who are just trying to get their feet wet and can't figure out how to change a diaper and get to church on time.
Mm.
So there are two ways that you can connect, and that's also intergenerational. So it's not just about the age, because then it becomes about the stage of life as well.
Mm.
So you can be intentional about that and saying, all right, let's do it all in stages, not do it all in one time.
Ooh. Okay, so when we're talking about the churches that are saying, we love what you're saying,
mm-hmm,
we
mm-hmm.
want to begin to implement that and mm-hmm. do it in stages, look at those ages,
mm-hmm.
but we still have our tithers that are very opinionated mm-hmm. and they're not going to love change.
Yes.
Virginia, give us one thing we could do mm-hmm. Or begin to do immediately. Mm-hmm. Maybe you already have, but just to give them something literally tangible to say, mm-hmm. here's one thing you can do going back
mm-hmm.
When you're thinking of those tithers that probably are hard to kind of shift and mm-hmm. move, and they're very keen to know, hey, hold mm-hmm. on, there's some changes that are starting to happen.
I don't know about that. They smell change.
They can see it. They're like, wait a minute, this ain't a normal song.
Well, come on now. Those are the folks that, okay, so if you think of a bell curve, you're going to have your people who are your early adopters.
Yeah.
Find your early adopters. So someone in that age group, someone in those tithers, those old timers are going to be on board and say, we need to do this. They have to be your persuaders. They have to be your proclamators to say, hear ye them. This is going to work. You will always have your naysayers on the other side of the bell curve that aren't going to do it no matter what you say. Mm-hmm. They call them over my dead body folks.
Come on.
And it can still happen over their dead body. So keep in mind that there are some people that may never change. But then the middle of the bell curve are the people who will move, and they're more likely to move with the early adopters once they see that this can work.
That's true.
So those are the people, once you have your first people who are like, yes, this can work, and allow them to proclaim it and allow them to model it
mm-hmm.
so that the others can see, we're not trying to kill you. We're not trying to change the church totally, but there are some minor changes that we mm-hmm. need to make if this church is going to continue to grow.
which is why it's so crucial when you're saying that we have these events where they can sit down and play a board game with someone who they might not actually sit down with. Mm-hmm. Then when you pair that with vision, maybe they begin to see a glimpse of, oh, there's another way to do church. I would have never had this opportunity had we not done an event that looked like this.
Yes. And even if, and at Milestone, so like our church is turning 100 years old this year. So we are doing a documentary. And in doing this documentary, it's helping the younger people to see the heritage and the history and the legacy of the church. So now they want to connect more with some of the older people because they're like, wow, I want to learn. And then the older people are going, wow, I'm old. I'm getting ready to go see Jesus at some point. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure that this legacy is passed on. Mm-hmm. So if you give them on-ramps to be able to connect in with the story and help them to see it's their responsibility to pass the story on and give them opportunities to do that in creative ways.
Okay, so that's a perfect launching pad to this next space. Mm-hmm. If we're out in the community with our neighbors and our mindset is for all neighbors, should we view this time as a recruitment for our church or for ministry opportunity? I mean, there's this tension of we want to just be for you, but we also want you to come to our church, and we could just be wanting to just minister. I mean, how should we be viewing these times when we're just out in the community?
There are times in the community where it's about getting the gospel out there. Then there are other times where it's just about loving on our community, loving our neighbor as we do ourselves. For instance, I know that there's a church in Cambridge. They love on the community right in front of the steps of City Hall. What that looks like is passing out meals to homeless people. What that looks like is singing some songs, their gospel songs. What that also looks like is they have doctors and nurses there that are able to physically mend wounds of people and give some basic medical advice. But there's no gospel preach. There's no message. There's no sermon, as it were. But they are loving on everybody, whether it's a mother walking by with a baby in a baby carriage or a senior citizen going by in a cane that just needed a meal. They're loving on that community. And they've made it a space available so that they can touch everybody how they need to be touched.
That's so good.
That's what I think it looks like. But I think, again, it requires some thought, some intentionality. And the practice is whoever needs the touch and how they need the touch, that's how we give it to them. We don't give them what we think they need. What is the need? And we meet the need that way, whether it's medical. And for others, they just want to talk to somebody. They're very lonely. So as Brennan Manning talks about he has a book, The Ragamuffin's Gospel. Oh. And he talked about when he was lost, as it were, and he had a friend that literally sat in the gutter with him while he was drunk and vomiting. This friend loved him so much, he sat in the gutter with him. We need to do that. Be willing to sit with people if it's in the gutter, if it's on a street corner, with the prostitute who's trying to figure out life, to the wealthy millionaire who's got everything, but there's still something missing.
Right.
So we have to be willing to, what is the need, and do our best to try to meet that need in that space.
If you are enjoying Virginia's thoughts, you can continue to read so much more on her blog. In fact, I want to take a moment and read a portion of your blog here because we got an excerpt, and then I want you to kind of talk to us about it. What can often rub me the wrong way, though, is when we, maybe unintentionally, make it all about ourselves. We wear shirts that advertise our church. We pull out press releases and then oftentimes get together afterwards to celebrate all of the good things we did. This communicates to the unchurched or de-churched people in your community that your efforts weren't solely rooted in your love for the community, but instead they were self-focused. So as you're writing that and we're thinking of what are some of the best ways to serve our communities, is it changed based on where we're living or when we're thinking about how do we best serve our communities? I mean, as we're thinking of that, yet still trying to serve our communities, what would you say to those people?
I think it dovetails with the shift in our thinking about missions. There was a while where missions was about going overseas. We had that same matching t-shirt in the airport. I saw your group. I saw this group. And we're so happy. And we come back. And, oh, we built three wells. And we did this and we did that. But the shift in thinking about missions is now towards empowering the people who are there. So for us, when we do missions at our church, we go in and we ask the pastor, what do you want? Before we even get there, we ask them, what do you want? What do you need? We pay attention to the needs of what they're asking for, and we meet that. If they say, we want you to bring in clothes, and we bring clothes. If they don't want clothes this time, we don't do that. Translating that to the community. When our neighborhood says, like there are certain neighborhoods who've been crying out because of all of the racial injustice. So maybe we're a homogeneous church that isn't a part of that racial stream, and we don't know what to do. So instead of just saying, okay, we're going to go out and we're going to hold picket signs too. Why not go out and begin to have some conversations with the people who are there and find out what they need? And then we support you that way. It goes back to the assessing and finding out, what does our neighborhood really need? What are they calling for? And maybe some of us, it may just call us to a place of prayer and say, God, I don't know what my neighborhood needs. Mm-hmm. And be okay with that. And not try to answer a question or provide an answer to a question that nobody's asking. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key with these T-shirts. And my pet peeve with that, sorry. You can tell that is my axe there. But I think we have to look at outreach, and not just outreach, but look at ministering to our community differently.
Yeah.
What does the community need? And what is the call on us who are there in those communities, especially those that are in the city context? We are there. Why are you physically in that community? What does God want from you? What is the prophetic voice? For those of us that are either rural or in the suburban context, you're still located in a community and you've created a community. What's the call to that part of the neighborhood? Whether it's suburban or rural, there's something God is asking of you prophetically to that piece of land that you are located on. How do we discover that? Well, first, I think we have to hear from God. Mm-hmm. Then once we hear from him, we need to take the steps to make sure that it's connecting with every generation, because God is a God of generations. When we read about the generations in the Bible, he spoke, even just when we say Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, three different generations. When we read in the Bible of all of those, and this one had this one, and old King James is begat this one, and this one had this one. It's saying something for a reason. God is saying every generation has a need. And I'm asking each generation to speak to that need. How do we do it? That is the million-dollar question.
That is the million-dollar question. And you mentioned it goes back to assessing, and I'm going to take us back there just for a second, mm-hmm. because I let you off the hook a little bit earlier,
but I got to
ask the question.
Okay, come on.
Because you said that it may be beneficial to put people who are from that neighborhood at your table mm-hmm. during a conversation, mm-hmm. or may not look like you at mm-hmm. that conversation, or think like you in this mm-hmm. conversation, as you're building these programs, as you're building these Sundays. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will place people that don't look like them in the communicating of the message on a Sunday or at the event,
yes.
but they never really put somebody as they're building the event, the construction of the event, mm-hmm. and the conversations that are needed during that. So talk about that, because I do think that's a big tension. There's many people who are making the effort to say, hey, we need a diverse cast
right.
communicating the message.
Right.
But when you go back behind the scenes, there's not necessarily a diverse cast constructing
right.
and having conversations about the message.
Right, right, which is the issue. So the message comes out a certain way, and we're wondering, what's wrong with this? What had happened was, well, mm-hmm. you didn't ask the people. It's what happened with Pepsi recently,
uh-oh.
With the Pepsi commercial.
That's true.
Okay, so... yeah, I can go there. So it's like you did not ask the people. If you had just asked one person, they might have said, why don't you talk to this one? But again, that's a pure example of us. We think we know. And because we have, I have this brother or this sister up front and they're going to communicate this message. But what is the message they're communicating? Where did it come from? It still didn't come from the people who need to voice it.
And they can sniff that out so quickly.
Oh, big time. And so it still doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so we say, okay, we got the person out front. We've changed this. But no, the core is about ownership and voice.
Wow.
And if you don't give the generations ownership and voice, it doesn't make a difference. It's not going to be effective. It's not going to work. So for us, when we first started in our community, we had a thought of what we thought the community needs this. Mm-hmm. And we brought in a consultant because we had a grant from a local area, a local organization ministry. And so we brought in a consultant who said, did you ask anybody in this neighborhood if that's what they need?
Oh, that's good.
So that meant we had to get out of the four walls and go and talk to the key, and here's a term for you, key stakeholders in our community. Mm. We had to identify who were the key neighbors that knew everything that was going on in our neighborhood. From the youngest to the oldest, to the old woman sitting across the street who knew everything, said, "Oh, y'all left a light on upstairs at the church. Go get that light." And we're like, "Ah, she knows something." So we spent time going out, talking to people. Here's the conversation: talking to people and putting their feedback at the table. Some came to the table, mm-hmm. and some their feedback came to the table.
That's good.
It dramatically changed what we thought we were going to do in the community. So we ended up scrapping our plans. And here's another thing. Yes, it will bring you to a place of change. Mm. When you include someone else's voice at the table, it's going to make you change. Mm. Because what you think isn't necessarily the solution.
Wow.
So we brought those people to the table. And some of those voices didn't look like us, didn't sound like us, didn't worship like us, didn't really even know who we were. But it brought about an awareness that our community, our neighborhood needs this. And then we had a decision to make. Are we going to provide it?
Mm.
And that was a hard decision as well. Mm-hmm. And when we made that change, it brought another change. So in who had to deliver it, because it meant that it couldn't be everybody who looked and acted and sounded a certain way. It had to make space for new voices at the table.
So and that goes back to the part where you're saying now you may have to change the culture you're building,
yes.
in your church.
Yes.
Like you may have to begin to say, hey, we're going to begin to include different kinds of voices, different kinds of conversations, man, we've,
yes.
never even had before here,
yes.
in this church, because we're listening to our community.
Yes.
Which makes a church so much more effective, but gives vision to those sitting in those seats to understand where we're going and exactly,
yes.
what we're doing. So while we're thinking that, you said this requires young to the old. We haven't actually talked about the young.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
to the churches who are saying, hey, we're getting the kids and students in our ministries to think intergenerationally, mm-hmm. as they serve their communities, is there something that we as leaders should be mindful of saying or doing that will prompt this next generation,
mm-hmm.
to think beyond just their peers,
mm-hmm.
and regarding how they serve others beyond, right. just themselves?
Right, because that is another mindset shift.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
life is beyond just everybody who's under 20.
Oh, yeah. The teens, me,
right.
me.
Me, myself, and I. Old school song, me, myself, and I. So in helping our teens to understand that they need to come out of their box and bubble, we were intentional about helping them to see, to understand the world beyond them by asking them certain questions. Not just the, what do you want to be when you grow up? And not just, can you imagine a world when you're 20 or in 5 years from now? But we would say to them, if you could make changes now,
wow.
what would they be?
Wow.
And then we help them to see that this change brings this about. In other words, it's a systems thinking term called unintended consequences. So there are certain consequences that you're intentional about, but with every intentional consequence, there are unintended consequences. So we want you to keep that in mind. And then we kind of played fantasy games like, okay, so if you do this, this brings about this. What about this? What about that? So we help them to see, to expand their thinking. Mm. What would your parents say about that? What about your grandparents? How would you include them along? We made it personal, because if you just said, what about a 65-year-old woman? But if you said, what about your grandparent?
Yeah.
What about your auntie and them? What about your cousin and them?
Yeah.
Then it brought them to a space of saying, this isn't just about me.
Mm.
How do I connect the whole? So it helped them to think and plan, where then they got to a space where they were now intentional, saying, oh, no, we can't do that because so-and-so can't get up the stairs. We have to remember our seniors. Let's do it on the ground floor and not do it upstairs because we don't have an elevator in our church.
Mm.
So they started thinking differently about even the events we planned and making sure that every age group was intentionally included.
Now this isn't necessarily convenient for a lot of people, because you're essentially saying it's opening up conversations with,
yes.
your students and kids. And,
yes.
you're saying, rather than telling them what you're going to do,
yes.
you're allowing them to come to these conclusions,
mm-hmm.
and for themselves, so they can then have ownership too,
yes.
and be behind these decisions and say, we're for the people,
mm-hmm.
who are in a different age range than we are.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely wonderful
and
strategy.
And that's slower. Mm-hmm. It takes longer.
Mm-hmm. And planning.
It does. You have to plan. You can't just shoot from the hip, and everybody's not just flying with you because that's the way you want to fly.
That's so good. Okay, so we could literally talk about this all day, but we have to kind of land this plane. So if you could speak directly to the church leaders listening right now, what would you say to them to help them understand the importance of being for all people, both in their churches, also in their communities?
I would start by saying to the church leaders, I would go to the God factor. First of all, God requires this of us. He requires us to reach generations. Nowhere in the Bible can we see it was just for this one. Even when Timothy's talking about, I've called the old, I've called the middle age, I've called the young, there's still a calling to all of us to reach everybody. Then I would say be open for change. Understand that this process is just that. It's a process, and it's not going to be easy, and it will require some change. Be willing to suspend some of the thinking that they have, to even listen and to hear what other voices have to say. Because if you have your own thoughts and your own ways of doing it, and you're not open for change, and you're not open to even listening, it's not a fair process, and it won't bring about the fruit that you desire. Then I would also say, have some expectation that this is a good thing for your house, for your ministry, for your community, to have all of the generations ministering to and with each other.
So, so good. Listen, Virginia Ward, it is always an honor and privilege to get a chance to talk to you. Is there ways that we can stay connected? What's the best way if people want to follow up with you and have further conversations? How could they get in contact with you?
So you can find me through my church at Abundant Life Church in Cambridge, which is alccambridge.org. I am also on Twitter, V.A. Ward. Wow. On Twitter. I am also on Facebook, Virginia Ward from Boston, which is easy. And then the blog, which is actually reformatting, it will be Virginia Ward Online. So you'll find me in the new space. And then if you're really, really, really into, you're in the Boston area and you want to stop by Gordon-Conwell, feel free to stop by Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, the Boston campus in Roxbury. We'll go to lunch in a great space in right in the heart of Roxbury, and it will be good for you.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time here. I hope that we get a chance to follow up, and I believe there's going to be many more conversations to come.
Wow, there is so much stuff for us to unpack from what we just heard. Amazing stuff. Ash, I know that you had some thoughts about, especially about what Chuck had to share right off the top about the importance of intergenerational relationships within your church.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, as you grow up and you walk with the church, you start to realize the church isn't perfect because it's full of imperfect people.
Yeah.
And I think there's something so important and inspiring about having somebody who's older than you further down the road and knows the imperfections that exist in a church, but still loves the church, still loves Jesus, and still loves people.
Yeah.
I need that personally for my faith walk.
Yeah, I think everybody like has to have that role model that they can look to. I know for me, like there's a guy at our church, John Woodall, who is just a guy who texts me randomly or drops a direct message on Instagram or something. And it's just such an encouragement to me to see him living out his faith in such a powerful way. Do you have somebody that you look to?
Yeah, you know, the first name that comes to mind is this woman named Elaine Scott, who works at Browns Bridge.
Yeah.
And she, every time I'm with her, I just like want to soak in every word that she says, all the wisdom that she has.
Yeah.
She's been doing ministry way longer than me, and she's still in love with Jesus and still in love with ministry. And I just, it makes me want to keep going.
I absolutely love that. I think we all value the idea of intergenerational, but sometimes it's so, and this is why I loved what Chuck said, it's so easy to forget about it when we don't have it, but we know when it's there. It's so important for us to cultivate that. So I absolutely love that. Now, Virginia was amazing as well, right? I mean, the only person with a better accent on this podcast than me.
Well, it's debatable. We'll see.
I loved how she said smat. She was smat.
How do you say it?
Smat. She was saying she
but
was
how
smart.
Do you
smart.
I understand how, what you're saying. I'm saying like in your accent, how do you
I
say
I would
it?
Say she was smart. How would you say it?
He goes smart, smart, smart.
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 Yeah. No, she was fantastic though. I loved what she had to share. That whole idea about how we make church about ourselves. I mean, woof, that was so challenging.
Gut check.
Okay. So I want to ask you a direct question straight off the back of everything that she said. You know, she was talking about how sometimes when a church goes out and serves other people, we make it about the church. You've just gotten back from a missions trip. You've been on several missions trips. And one of the key things that happened, well, one of the, not key things, one of the things that does happen is people invariably post on Facebook or Instagram or any sort of social media channel, photos of them with the people they're serving, and they make the story about themselves. How do you combat that?
You know, I was totally guilty of that my very first mission trip. Yeah. I so badly wanted to capture what I was experiencing and show other people and like not forget it that I wasn't focused on the people that I was taking pictures of. I kind of like look back at it and I feel like they were zoo animals in a way. Mm. And I was just coming in, taking pictures and showing the world.
Yeah.
It was totally about my experience.
And you might not have done that intentionally.
Not at all. I was totally unaware of it. Yeah. Nobody ever talked about it. So I never thought about it.
Yeah.
And so as I've been doing it, I've learned, I've challenged myself. I never want to use somebody else's poverty to further my portfolio or to tell my story louder. Mm. And so I have this rule that I won't post a picture of somebody unless I know their name and I know their story.
Yeah, that's
and the
so
reason
good.
I do that is because then I make it about them and not about me as a missionary. And it's a way to give somebody who doesn't have a voice that's louder. And that's the reason why I'm okay posting as long as I know them.
Yeah, I totally agree. Some of you listening might not know this, but I'm actually a photographer and
very, very good one.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, when I've been on mission trips, I've been on quite a few. My wife actually works in the mission field of our church, in the mission arm of our church. So I get to go on quite a few trips. And I remember the very first one I went on, I packed all my camera gear and I tweeted at my favorite photographer in the world, Jeremy Cowart, who's done a whole bunch of humanitarian photography. And I asked him, hey, what one tip would you give me for shooting when I go to El Salvador? And he said to me exactly what you just said. He said, don't even pull your camera out until you know the person's name and the person's story. And I've carried that with me for like 8 years now. Every trip I go on, I do not even break out my camera to take a photo, a portrait of somebody until I've learned their name and their story. Mm-hmm. Because the idea for me is making them the hero of the story. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's too easy for us when we go on mission trips to make ourselves the hero of the story. And I get why we do that, because often we've got, you know, donors in our church who have given money so that we can go on these trips. And sometimes we might want to make them the hero of the story, the people who actually helped pay for the trip. But the idea is, and this is what I heard Virginia talking about, is making the person the hero of the story, not us. Do you know what I mean? We're not the hero of the story. They are. It's all about them.
Yeah. And I think that's how you can include your supporters, is rather than telling your story as a missionary so loud, you tell their story louder.
Yes.
And that makes a way bigger impact anyways.
Tell their story louder. Tweet that. Where's Kevin now, producer? Make sure that gets on the show notes. Say that again. I love it.
I don't even know what I said.
Make their story louder. I absolutely love that. That was fantastic. Well, there was so much amazing stuff there, right?
I love talking about this topic. It's so challenging.
I totally agree. This is one of those ones where I know that I'm personally going to go back to the show notes and check out everything that was said and check out everything that Virginia and Chuck had to say, because I think I might have missed some with her Bostonian accent.
Yeah.
So I want to check that out again. So show notes are available at thinkorangepodcast.com. Make sure you check that out. This is a great place to find out all the information, get all the resources about the podcast. Great thing to do. ThinkOrangePodcast.com. A couple of other things we would love you to do before we sign off. We would love for you to subscribe to this podcast. There's a number of different ways that you can do that through whatever channel it is that you're listening on right now. Make sure you subscribe. That's just a great way for us to stay in contact with you and for you to become part of the Think Orange community. We might even put your photo up somewhere here in the bunker. That would be awesome, actually.
Yes, I love this idea.
We could wallpaper the subscribers' photos all over the Think Orange podcast bunker.
Sounds like something a photographer would say.
We should take photos of it on the bunker and put it on the show notes.
Okay.
I want to take photos. Kevin, our producer, write that down. We want to take photos of inside the bunker and put it on the show notes. That would be amazing. What else do we want them to do?
We would love to hear from you, especially in the month of July. We've been focusing on service and being for our neighbor. And we would love to hear some of the things you've learned, some of the things that have challenged you, that you've taken with you into your neighborhoods.
Yeah. So tell us your stories. Ask us your questions. As always, you can send them to the thinkorangepodcast.com, thinkorangepodcast.com. And that's where you'll find a contact form. We would love to get your stories and get your questions about this podcast. And one more thing we would love for you to do, rate and review this podcast on iTunes. This is a great way for us just to continue to get the word out to more and more teams, more and more churches, more and more next generation leaders about the content that we're revealing here on the podcast. So please go and do that. Give it a 5-star rating if you think this is awesome, or if you just think Ash is awesome. Aww. And her singing is awesome, even though we didn't really get a song from you this time around. I'm a bit disappointed. The ratings
we're in a reflective mood, very reflective mood.
I'm sure that there's an Adele song that would be reflective that you could potentially sing right now as we ask people to leave a review. She's got nothing. It was dead silent there. She gave me nothing. Literally gave me nothing when I said that. Hey, anyway, share this with a friend as well. Make sure you tweet about it. Make sure you post about it on Instagram. Make sure you post about it on Facebook. You know, a great idea would be send us a photo on Instagram of you listening to this podcast right now. Show us it on your radio. Show it on your computer. Show it. Show your team listening to it, all that sort of stuff. Send a photo. Post it to Instagram or something like that and use the hashtag ThinkOrangePodcast. We would love to track it and we will love to follow you back. In fact, I'm going to say this right now. Kevin, take a note of this as well. We're going to follow back everybody who posts a photo using the hashtag ThinkOrangePodcast. Okay. Did he write that down?
He wrote it down.
Okay. I think he wrote it down mentally.
He has a lot of homework in this.
I know. I didn't even see his hand move. He's just mentally taking notes here. Make sure you write that down. We're going to follow everyone who takes a photo and uses the hashtag
ThinkOrangePodcast.
You're so bossy today. I am, but I want to make Kevin the hero of this podcast because he is absolutely amazing. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Did you ever know that you're my hero?
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. And remember, when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.